Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the second year in a row.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Mr. Wonderful here. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. When you get there, don't forget all the other things you can do, like listen to archives. A couple of thousand, over 2,000 of those on the on our site, and hundreds and hundreds of articles written by lots of our Brain Trust members, and a number of them by myself, as well as some written there by our good friend Wayne Cruz, who's with us right now. Wayne is Vice President for Policy and Director of Tech Studies at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He's an old friend of ours. Wayne Cruz, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jim. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's good to have you back, as always. Wayne, I know one of the things you want to talk about today is antitrust.
Sure.
And several years ago, I guess, maybe, starting in about 98? I've forgotten exactly now. It's been so long. When the US v. Microsoft case hit, and when it really, you know, was handed over to Judge Jackson and it heated up for almost 2 years. I covered that antitrust case that was filed against Microsoft by the U.S. government. I covered that at least once a month. We had somebody who was on the ground at that case. And in fact, I think you may have made some of those trips on the show to talk about that. And I remember saying then that what it seemed to me that the U.S. trade U.S. antitrust laws needed a new model, because if there is justification for having antitrust laws, and some people say that there isn't any justification for it, but if there is, the cases that they're trying would be moving, especially technology cases like Microsoft, they're moving so fast that by the time the case gets through the court, the issue is moot.
That's exactly right. You know, we were talking about the Microsoft case. I think I was on your show as early as back in 95.
No, I wasn't here in 95, but maybe 98.
Well, as early as you, the case has been going on that long.
And oh, so yeah, it was way back to the mid-90s, but it got heated up, really, and gained national attention when it went to Judge Jackson.
But think about the early days of the net and Microsoft software, you know, online software, the Microsoft Netscape case. At that time, it was said, well, we need to do something about Microsoft's market power, and a lot of people warned, said, well, if you move after Microsoft, if you make this kind of intervention on the Internet, it's going to expand. It's going to expand into other software companies, and as we're seeing now, Microsoft is having a replay of these same antitrust issues facing it overseas.
Yep.
Basically, what's happening is some in the EU and even in other even in Asia, there's a Japanese case as well, want different constraints put on Microsoft, just like here in the U.S. And it ranges from handing over software code, unbundling the media player. You know, when you're surfing the net and you watch a video clip or listen to a streaming song or something like that, and you open up media player, well, they want to require Microsoft to separate media player from the operating systems. Real networks here in the U.S. wants that, and then some overseas want that as well. So there's that tying issue that Microsoft is still facing. And yet, at the time the case, you know, at the period in time you were talking about, the issue was the browser.
Right.
And then it took a couple of years for that to work through the court.
And it was bundling the browser with the Windows software, operating system.
It was bundling that browser with the operating system, and then things moved forward. But software companies have always benefited themselves and other people from bundling in new capability. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft is doing the same thing now with security software and firewall software. And in order to give consumers, you know, what the techies like to call a user experience that makes sense and that is seamless and that they don't have to keep fiddling with the computers, it makes sense to bundle software that way. But that's one of the things that Microsoft's being targeted on. So it's being targeted
one of the
now.
Things, for, Wayne, as we're going to the break in a second, one of the ways to think about this, folks, is imagine that you, the electrical company that provides you with your electricity that basically has a monopoly in your area, what if they wound up throwing in cable? What if they bundle cable in with the electricity delivery that they offer you at either little or no cost? The government would think that that would be uncompetitive, and of course the cable company would also be saying that that's a restraint of trade, that's uncompetitive for them. And
that's actually a better analogy than you think. We ought
yeah.
to talk about
stand by. We're going to take a quick break and come right back with our good friend Wayne Cruz after these messages. 20 till. Stay with us. Back, it's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Wayne Cruz. He is the VP of Policy and the Director of Tech Studies at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Wayne, tell us a little bit about CEI.
CEI, we just had our 20th anniversary. Now, I've
Congratulations.
Been back there now for just a few months. I've been at CEI in a stint before. I went to the Cato Institute, and I'm still an adjunct scholar there as well. CEI was started by Fred Smith, working on regulatory policy issues from antitrust to banking. And also CEI is known as one of the leading free market environmental think tanks. That's one of our key areas, looking at ways of addressing environmental concerns, land and water, land and air quality, water quality, excuse me, and endangered species issues and so forth from a market perspective, a property rights perspective. So we have a lot of work on the plate.
Well, and give us a website too, please.
It's www.cei.org.
CEI.org. Wayne, we were talking about antitrust, and the thing is, folks, I guess I'm not going to be one of the ones who say that I don't like any antitrust laws. I guess I can't say any, although there are probably some folks in your organization, maybe you are, Wayne, I'm not sure. You may think that antitrust laws are not necessary, that they unnecessarily restrain trade. But I'm not going to go that far. But I do say that an overbearing government hand in the 21st century that citizens like me and you and our audience have to be careful, and we have to watch our government and make sure that they don't go too far, because they can. I think they went too, even though I think Microsoft had some exposure, I think that they were capable of being ham-fisted and maybe, you know, running roughshod over some folks. But I think that the way they were treated wasn't right. And also, I certainly think that the way Microsoft has been treated in Europe isn't right. And I wonder, I'm pretty much convinced that the way Microsoft was treated in Europe, Wayne, was more about how some of the European Union folks feel about the U.S., and not our position in Iraq, but some of the trade issues, than it was about what Microsoft did.
Well, that's right. Will you raise skepticism about antitrust? And I think it's right to do that, because remember, antitrust is regulation. It's a kind of government intervention in the economy, and even where folks think there are good uses of it, there's a lot of potential for abuse. And throughout its history in the U.S., we've seen that. We see antitrust be used as an anti-competitive tool against successful businesses. Because imagine, if a merger is going to occur and the merger is actually going to be efficient, it's actually going to lower prices. Well, if you're a high-cost competitor, if you're a higher-cost rival, you're going to oppose that efficient merger. And will lobby to stop it or block it in one way or another. Because think about it. If a merger between two companies really were efficient, and it were going to raise prices, why would the rival oppose it? Because he could simply sell more. He'd be better off under the merger. So, and that's the fundamental problem in antitrust, and is that it gets misused. And we're seeing the same thing with the European instance that you just mentioned. Just as antitrust can be protectionist in the U.S. for companies, it can be used the same way by foreign governments.
Yep.
If they have their own native industries that they want to promote, or if they have politically powerful native industries, they can use antitrust as a weapon against American firms who want to move in. Now, I think it's bad for their customers as well. If antitrust is bad for consumers in the sense that it interferes with efficient market activity, however disruptive it may sometimes be, if it interferes that way and becomes a protectionist tool, it's even worse when it gets exported overseas. And unfortunately, they're embracing a lot of our antitrust laws. Now, your concern, I think, is going to be a little bit different. Small businesses have a stake in this, too, and that's your key area, and I think it's important to indicate that. Now, there are a lot of areas. I've mentioned software. You mentioned electricity, even, and the notion of bundling different kinds of network services. Well, as we're seeing in telecom, given voice over the Internet, wireless, cable phone calls, ordinary telephony, there are lots of ways that even networks can be competitive. The things that we thought were natural monopolies can be competitive. In software, whether it's media players or browsers or anything like that, it's very hard for one company to dominate. And even if one did, there are always the other businesses in the supply chain. You know, it's the supplier, the business buyers and the business suppliers, the software developers, Wall Street, advertisers. Everyone can quickly mobilize against anybody who attempts to monopolize. Now, getting around to the small business angle, small businesses need a couple of things. One, they need to grow, and they need to be able to grow and be free of regulatory intervention, whether it's antitrust or any other kind. And then second, all of these services that we're talking about, whether it's electricity or cable or software, small businesses buy.
We buy those services, that's right.
Just like customers,
browsers,
and just like consumers.
Like browsers and operating
exactly.
software.
So an activist antitrust policy hurts small business by preventing it to grow, I think, and also by raising its cost when it buys services from the outside world.
Antitrust can be seen to be valid to me if it helps the consumer. If it stops the consumer from being harmed. But when it's just to protect an uncompetitive business model, that's where it's wrong, and that's what's been happening. Tim Till, we'll be right back with our good friend Wayne Cruz. Stay with us. We're back at 7 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and that's Mr. Mark Knopfler on guitar there. He's one of the best. Wayne Cruz knows a little bit about music. He's a musician himself. He's our good friend and VP of Policy and Director of Tech Studies at Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're talking about antitrust laws and the future of antitrust laws. Wayne, to wrap up quickly on the small business angle, one of the things that I'm encouraging small business owners to do is to focus on their intellectual property. And to remind them that they have it. And somebody listening is creating some intellectual property that's going to one day could be the next Microsoft model, the next Microsoft type of deal. You know, it's like, as you know, I mean, Bill Gates started his business in a garage. And so it's they're out there. And so I want those people to believe. I don't want them to look at what happened to Microsoft and to say, wow, I don't think I want that.
The problem is some of that might already be happening. You know, if you look at different kinds of legislation and regulations that impact small business, you know, a long time ago when I first started doing an annual regulatory report that I called 10,000 Commandments,
right.
I put a chart in there showing the various workplace regulations that apply as a business grows. You know, like family and medical leave and things of that sort. And, you know, there's incentives for companies just to stay small so they don't get stocked with those new kinds of regulations, you know, to stay under 50 employees or something of that sort. And you can have the same kind of impact if you have activist government policy. If you're a really successful software maker, you know, say you're making security software, questions are going to come. If you become extremely big, questions will come up over the bundling of new services with your new software in an activist antitrust environment.
Your next innovation, if you know the thing about it, Wayne, in the 21st century, you don't have to be the size of Microsoft with technology today, especially with software. You don't have to be the size of Microsoft today in order to be found as a monopoly.
That's
because
right.
of the ability to leverage technology. You don't have to have tens of thousands of people. And so you can get there. But my point is, you can get to a point where some people think you have a monopoly real quick, quicker now than 25 years ago.
That's true. You can in a tech world, you could grow. Imagine the issues that are facing biotechnology companies potentially. You know, Fred Smith, our president, always talks about the heavy regulation of biotech, and you know, it's for other reasons, not antitrust reasons, but.
Mm-hmm.
And he always points out, you know, we don't really have a Bill Gates of biotechnology, you know, of bioengineered foods and things like that, because the regulation is so heavy, it's hard for one entrepreneur to really grow and prosper that way and make that kind of a mark.
Does Fred believe that that's holding back biotech?
In the same way, when you have a new technology, you have a basic choice, is the way he's put it. You can either treat it like software and leave it alone and let it grow, as we had initially done with software
right.
before the Microsoft case, or you can treat it like a medical device, which is what we're doing with biotech, and you're going to have constant surveillance, oversight by an entity like the FDA that has to approve every single step. Imagine if Gates or any software company had to get every new addition to the software approved. For example, Microsoft wants to build in firewall software. They want to build in new kinds of security software. They want to build in more automatic updates, which they've done. They've done a lot of these things, but they'll need to continue to keep doing them. If they had to keep going back to the government to get approval, I mean, they would be crippled.
A small business that as we were talking about, that might be, you know, growing and emerging as a major player, you know, they're going to continue to innovate, and then their decision is, okay, how do I bring this innovation to market?
You have markets to worry about, consumers to worry about,
yep.
the product stability to worry about, the worthiness of the product, but when you've got regulators to worry about too. It adds a lot more uncertainty to the mix, ends up economy-wide, it ends up creating a huge drag and costing a lot in terms of employment and growth. But
these are just some. Wait, I've got to wrap it up because we're coming up on the end of the visit. But these these are some important things, folks, for you to think about. Wayne, I thank you for reminding us about them and for writing about them and studying them and bringing this information.
My pleasure, Jim.
Wayne Cruz, ladies and gentlemen, with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He'll be back. That's CEI.org if you want to read more about what Wayne has to say about these topics. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.